Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast, where each week we talk about four rhythms that help you reduce stress and anxiety and take charge of your emotional health. Rest, restore, connect, create.
These ideas come from Rebecca's best-selling book, Rhythms of Renewal, Trading Stress and Anxiety for a Life of Peace and Purpose. So grab your copy, invite your friends, and let's live in rhythm.
Welcome back. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe. And it's a very special day. I want everybody to join me right now because today is Rebecca's birthday. It's her birthday.
Yay!
Happy birthday, huh?
Thanks.
Let's all sing. Thanks. Ready? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Rebecca. Happy birthday to you.
If Joy was here, she'd be the loudest of all.
I know.
For sure.
It's just crazy that she would. I mean, I'm shocked that you're doing it, but she's doing this podcast in her birthday suit. It's just amazing. So all of you listeners,
Ashley's real grateful
to imagine
for this.
That,
whole podcast team.
Yeah.
Yep. Nope. We don't do that. Very
right,
well
I try.
Clothed.
I try.
But thanks, Gabe.
But I think
I can count
it's
on
fresh
you.
On my mind because we're coming out of this
fresh
marriage
on your
retreat.
Mind. My birthday
no,
suit.
No, the marriage retreat. We had so many incredible conversations that were about vulnerability.
Yes.
And nakedness and so many things that can only happen in a room where
as
you're talking about marriage
and possibly yeah. literally,
but no, so many people, you know, over 50 couples with us, and just it's always amazing when we get to be with couples and have these experiences, and you see people literally before your eyes, the light turning on about just some of these tweaks that they need to make in their conversations and their listening to one another and being reminded of why they fell in love and how God's at work in this journey. And it's always so encouraging because marriages are, it feels like under assault.
Yes.
And so this felt like a little bit of an act of war against the assault with these couples.
Yeah. And I just talked to a few people before it even began that week, and they were like, I'm just trying to get on a plane. I feel anxious. Like there's already that, you know, that was happening before even people got in the room. And it's the enemy doesn't want that conversation to go forward, doesn't want a deep dive for 2 days, doesn't want people who are ready to call it quits be like, all right, we're going to give it this one last thing. But God appoints for people to be there. So like you said, 100 people came together to go, we are fighting for our marriage. And you and I need that. We need to know we're not alone in fighting for our marriage.
Right.
There's a lot of people that feel alone in it. And we're just going to be those people that are going to beat that drum. Like, you're not alone in fighting for your marriage. And when you both together are just coming back to that covenant that says, I'm willing to do the work, to do what I need to do, to be better, to be more present, to be, you know, more brave, whatever those things are, when both people are like, I'm still willing to do the work.
And we know so many of you obviously couldn't be with us, but we want to remind you, there's an episode with Emerson Eggerich earlier this season that you could listen to that would give you insight into some of his perspective, some of the counsel that he gave over these couple of days, as well as Sissy Goff, another episode. Go back and listen to those things. If you're hearing this and you're like, man, I wish I could have been there. It just wasn't possible. Go listen to those and let those just be an encouragement that maybe those episodes are just what you need for right now.
Yeah, we'll put both episode links in the show notes so you can refer to that there. Please subscribe if you are somehow sent this from somewhere else. There's a whole archive. There's a library of emotional, spiritual, relational health experts over seasons 1, 2, and 3. And we just want you to have access to all the amazing conversations if you're new to this. And that way you'll get it.
And in addition, we have 3 more retreats planned beginning at the end of September. There's one in October and one in November. Tour in Franklin.
We're going strong this fall.
One's out in Colorado at Lost Valley Ranch. It's going to be an amazing fall. But if you want to join us and plan, like build in these days as a time to invest in yourself. We're going to be talking about life planning with Pete Richardson September 30th to October 1st in Franklin. And then we're going to go out west for Lost Valley Ranch. That was amazing last year. So many couples experiencing the outdoors adventure. We had snow, we had rain, we had sun. It was amazing. But we were outdoors and then we were learning together.
Yeah. And that was really more about rhythms, living out these rhythms in a healthy way. And we get to do it in action. I like the experiences that require our physical engagement. And so riding horses is one of those things that I've slowly gotten better at over the years. And if you haven't ridden and you're just like, I don't know if I could do that, come on. They will hold your hand and help you get up on that horse and feel confident in it.
And then we'll have Kurt Thompson back in Franklin in November. So we're going to just have a great time going deep with people who want to go deeper on this conversation of rhythms and implementing it into your life in smaller spaces where you can ask questions. You can have conversations around the table and with those that you respect so much. And so we're excited to do that. And you can learn more about it and be the first to know about it because these did sell out last fall. So go to RebeccaLyons.com/retreat. Give us your name and info, and you'll be the first to know about it before we publicly release the opportunity for people to register. And we hope you'll take advantage of that.
Yeah. So today's conversation is beautiful, heartfelt. It's deep. It's a deep dive into grief. And we talk about suicide. We talk about a brain tumor that took a life. There's death attached to this, but then there's also hope. And yeah. So,
and it's kind of giving you a glimpse into the other side of suicide, of what takes place for those that are left behind and what those conversations might look like with others, with family, and also with God. And so I think you're going to appreciate just taking a deeper look at the life of somebody who's walked through that and still come out with hope instead of despair. So let's listen in now to our conversation with Nikki Koziarz.
Welcome to the podcast, Nikki.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. It is such an honor and joy to be here with you today. I'm a huge fan of this podcast. I love it.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, I'm a huge fan of your work, your just discipleship, your honesty, your vulnerability. And we had this conversation before we hit record about how you started writing as a kid to process life. And I feel very kindred to that. Do you remember one of your favorite books growing up?
Oh, goodness. I
or
do.
Series?
It was actually... series. It was actually a play that I wrote for Christmas. And I remember I must have been in third or fourth grade. And it was about a star. Obviously, I was writing about the star that the wise men followed, but I kind of made it into like this just very captivating thing. And I'll never forget my teacher writing on the top of that page. I can still see it to this day. This is such a great idea. You're so creative.
Aww.
And so teachers, as you're listening to this today, like never underestimate what one comment like that can do to a little girl's soul.
Right.
That's amazing. I love that you shared that story because I'm sure, you know, as parents, teachers, all of us have these opportunities where we're interacting with people younger than us. And you don't in the moment realize what impact it could have. And it's just a good encouragement. Like
yeah.
Keep pouring into people, calling out gifts. It doesn't happen enough in our kids' lives.
Yeah, even in the fact that you remember visually what it looked like. I think that's just amazing, the power of a written note still, you know? Sometimes we're like,
right.
Just send a text or a voice memo or do a video. I'm like, Gabe and I were cleaning out our bookshelf the other night and we found him when he turned 40. I'm not saying he's old now. It was just a couple-ish years ago. And we started rereading all these notes that I had people write in. And something about the power of reading the weight of words that people have to say over you. I mean, my goodness. Gabe's just, yeah. You know, on cloud nine again right now.
As it's if like it was... getting to attend your funeral and you're still alive and you're hearing all these nice things people think about you. But Nikki, I mean, I want to get back into how you started writing from a young age because you found writing a way to process emotion. And it's amazing, as we'll get into today, some of what you've had to process at this stage in life. But how did you start to realize that this was a cathartic practice? It wasn't just an English assignment. Creating a play wasn't just, you know, something you did for fun, but this was actually going to be meaningful to your own mental health.
Mm. Well, I don't think I knew that until many, many years ago. I shared with you guys a little bit earlier that, you know, I went through a really hard experience at 19. I got pregnant before I was married, and the church has come a long ways in the last 20 years, thank goodness. But this was a time where, you know, there was a lot of church hurt that I experienced from leadership and from my own community, my own family. And so I remember one evening I was just up really late. My husband and I did get married, and God has been so faithful for the last 20 years through our process of our marriage. But I remember just being awake at like 2 o'clock in the morning and having no one to talk to and just crying my eyes out because I had so much pain and I didn't even know what to do with it. And my mom had, this was like right when the internet was still kind of brand new and, you know, we didn't have all social media and things like that. But I remember my mom had given us her old computer and I pulled it out and I just sat there for hours and just wrote out my emotions, my feelings, what I was experiencing, what I wanted to say to people that, you know, I would never actually say to their faces. And it just became a source of healing for me. And then, you know, as I continue to grow as a woman, as a mom, as a wife, writing just was an outlet for me. It was like I couldn't wait to get up super early in the morning just to sit behind a computer with words and just pound out what I felt like was happening inside of my soul. So I am a huge advocate. I think I have over 100 journals in my office right now.
Come on.
And Rebecca, I know you're a big fan of journaling as well. And so I believe in journaling. I do it every single day. And there's just something about getting your thoughts on paper that is just, it's so life-giving for someone who's struggling with a hard situation.
I agree. I think it's my form of taking a thought captive because when you can actually get it down, you can look at it and go, wow, that's actually not true. But you you don't even know sometimes what spins on repeat, and it will, you know, leave you kind of staring at the ceiling for 2 hours at 3 a.m. or whatever. But the minute I get up and I just put it down on paper, I can see the despair, or I can see the weight or the worry or whatever, and then go, okay, God, I know it to be true that this is yours. This is not mine. Like I'm supposed to cast this on you. And so it's just, it is for me that same thing. It's like getting it out of my brain and onto the paper helps me almost objectively realign what was inside and to go, yeah, this is a lie. It's hard to be as objective when it's still spinning internally. Well, let's jump into what you've had to navigate this last 18 months, 12 to 18 months with your family. So let's talk about your mom and let's talk about your brother to the degree you feel comfortable because you have gone through a couple tragedies very close to one another and in the height of, you know, then a global pandemic. So give us a little backstory that brought us to where you are now.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rebecca, for allowing this to be a safe place to share all of this. So 2.5 years ago, my mom actually passed away from a brain tumor. She was only 62 years old and she was given 6 months to live. And so Rebecca and, you know, Gabe, I know that you guys know when you're in ministry, like it's really hard to press pause on your life for 6 months because things have to keep moving. And so I found myself at the end of that season, just emotionally drained. I was exhausted. And I also found that my faith was really full of doubt because I had believed that God was going to heal my mom here on this earth. I mean, I had the anointing oil in there and I had the biggest prayer warriors you can think of in there. And, you know, I was also writing bold declarations on social media where I was saying, God's going to heal my mom. I know it. I believe this. And so at the end of that season, I felt devastated for multiple reasons. And when I actually turned in the contract to write my third book, I thought that I had walked through the hardest season of my life. I thought that was it. But the really hard reality was as soon as I signed the contract to write this next book, just a few weeks later, I got a phone call one morning from a doctor in Seattle, Washington, and I live just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And he was calling to inform me that my brother had tried to commit suicide and he was on life support and he was not expected to make it through the day. And so once again, I dropped everything in that moment and jumped on a flight and flew out to Seattle. God was so gracious that I did make it to be by my brother's side as he took his last breath. But that was a really hard thing to come off of just after losing my mom. And then got home just a couple weeks later, our horse died on our farm. We had an exchange student living with us. It was a really hard situation. And then boom, a pandemic hit and life as we all knew it was flipped upside down. So when I say that I wrote this book through the hardest season of my life thus far, I mean that with all of my heart. It was incredibly hard to push through. But just like we were talking about before, honestly, this became a place of therapy for me to sit down and like, I had to process my emotions. I had to process my grief and the loss of my brother and all the whys and all the, you know, the what ifs questions that come when you lose someone so tragically.
Was he your only sibling?
He was, yes. And so before the age of 40, he was older than me, 5 years older. So before the age of 40, I had lost half of my immediate family. It's just me and my dad that is left. So that's hard.
Yeah, that's hard. And you write about this in your new book, Flooded, the 5 best decisions to make when life is hard and doubt is rising. And I want us to hear more about that because so many people feel what you're explaining today. They have lost somebody that they love, and they're grieving that, and they're also walking through the effects of a pandemic. They're walking through the loss of the way life once was, and this is really hard for people to process and to know how to walk forward in that. And I'm curious for you, as you've described your ability to kind of write through this process. You know, there's a lot of people who don't write; they haven't put words to paper. I love that you're helping us better understand how to walk through it. So, can we just start with some of those decisions that when life is hard and doubt is rising for people, that what's that first step they need to take?
That's a great question and great concept. So here's the thing. I know you guys are huge fans of counseling, and I am too. I am a huge fan of counseling. I've gone through many hours of counseling. I'm also a huge fan of reaching out to your pastor and reaching out to friends to walk with you through really hard seasons, because we do need really sound people in our lives. But sometimes I think that we tend to forget that everything that we would ever experience, every human emotion, circumstance, hard thing that we would ever walk through on the earth, chances are there is someone in the scriptures who has gone through it. And so as a Bible teacher, kind of one of the rhythms that I have with teaching the Word of God is to find people that we can get behind who can teach us what it's really like to walk through something and to persevere and to experience the character of God. And so when I was walking through this really hard season, there was just one person that kept coming to me again and again and again in the scriptures. And his name is Noah. And Noah is a very familiar passage of scripture. Most of us who grew up in the church or went to vacation Bible school, we sang, you know, those silly songs about the Lord said to Noah, there was going to be a floody, floody, and to build the arky, arky, and, you know, all the animals were going to come in. And we're just kind of given this cute little Bible story picture of what Noah went through, right? But I can tell you, after spending an entire year studying the biblical account of Noah, the Lord showed me, first of all, we should not be decorating our kids' nurseries with Noah and the Ark. It's not really one of those stories that we should, you know, be doing it in that way. But that Noah could teach us what it was like to walk through something hard and impossible and to have faith on the other side. So these decisions that I talk about in the book, Flooded, they are decisions that we can clearly see Noah live out in his account. And so I'll just give you one of my favorite decisions of the 5. It's to remember that God is in charge. And so sometimes when we're walking through a really hard circumstance, we want to grab tight to control. And so we want to control anything and everything that we can, because everything feels out of control. And I'm very confident that at one point or another, Noah felt like things were out of control and he was in over his head and he wasn't sure how this was all going to turn out. But, you know, I kind of describe this process of remembering that God's in charge of the plan, but ultimately, I'm in control of my obedience. And so shifting our mindset from saying that God is in control to saying that God is in charge can really help us remember that there are actions and decisions that we have to make on our own in order to keep moving forward with our faith.
I'm thinking through these 5 actions, but I want to pause for a second. And first of all, just acknowledge your loss. I'm sorry. That's devastating. And I know you've processed that with a lot of people personally and privately, but I just want to on air go acknowledge that that is a massive thing. It's, you know, I learned that this was your brother's 4th suicide attempt.
Yes.
Yes. So this was not like a sudden thing. This was a battle that he was fighting for a while. And to be your only sibling, I mean, I know that you had to have felt that alongside your mom's, you know, very quick decline. And that's so much for anyone to carry. I mean, I don't care how strong you are, how faith-filled you are, how much of the Bible you've hidden in your heart. Like, that is such a massive weight and burden. And I do think there are listeners who are walking through something tragic as we speak. And part of our role as brothers and sisters is to sit with people in their grief and literally be with, right? Scripture's so beautiful about modeling that. And I think we sometimes just want to rush through it because it's just too hard. It's too overwhelming. But thank you for just being honest with it and sharing that with us today, sharing that with the listeners. And I'm hoping people take comfort from it. Do you have anything? I want to give a moment for you to say or acknowledge anything before I keep going.
No. Yeah, I appreciate that so much, Rebecca. And, you know, my brother, he did struggle with bipolar for almost a decade and drug addiction. And so it was a long, long journey that we had with him. And there's still something always in you, especially when you're walking through someone with mental illness. And, you know, we experienced, I mean, everything that you can think of, the highs and the lows, and I mean, just everything in between and the hopes. You know, I know my brother, Mike, loved Jesus. I just want to affirm this over anyone who's listening today, who's walking through something similar. I've heard from so many people recently who have also experienced this. And I know that today my brother is in heaven with Jesus. I know that he is healed and whole. And I know that there are some things though that happen on this side of eternity that will never make sense to the human mind. And mental illness and suicide is one of those things that we can sit here all day long and try to make sense of it and explain it. And, you know, sadly, both times when my mom passed away and then when my brother passed away, you know, sometimes people will say things to us and just like the best heart, right? Like they have the most good intentions for what they say. And they'll say things like, oh, well, now your brother is an angel in heaven and he can watch over you. And, you know, God did heal your mom, just not the way that, you know, you expected him to. And sometimes those things are not super helpful in the moment. We just need someone to sit with us, like you're saying, and say, you know what, this makes no sense. And I get this, and I'm going to walk with you through this. So thank you for saying that today, Rebecca, that I've never had a podcast host allow this to be a space that, you know, we could walk through this together. So thank you.
Mm. Well, I'm sure you're having to talk about this a lot. And I want this for people to feel like this is a conversation that you would have with a friend over coffee, you would confide in, you would feel safe or transparent, vulnerable. Because you and I both know, like, just because you've written about it doesn't mean it's all buttoned up and fixed. Like, healing is a journey, and part of the healing journey is to be transparent and vulnerable with the story that you've been given, and God is being glorified in that. What are you invested in? How do you make the most of all God has given you? Do you want to be purposeful with the way you manage your time, talents, and your resources so you can make a bigger impact in your community? I want to invite you to join Thrivent and myself for a special on-demand virtual event where we discuss the wisdom of women and the intersection of faith and finances. You can register for this event at bit.ly/Thrivent Lions. Again, that's bit.ly/Thrivent Lions. And of course, you can find that link in my show notes. We would love to see you there. I'm curious, as you wrote down these five decisions, and how has that played out to get to that point, right? Because I would imagine that was like a daily decision to go, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to praise God. I'm going to walk and I'm going to remember and I'm going to trust and all those things. But was that kind of something that was conscious, like immediately with the tragedy next day? Was this something that unfolded over time? Was it kind of your manna or your lifeline daily? How did your grief play out?
I wish it was the next day. but man, I remember the days after my brother died. His life, it was just really tragic at the end. He had become homeless and he had three small kids and they had been divorced for a while. And so it was trying to put together a puzzle for several days of just kind of his final moments. And you know, I'm an Enneagram 6, which means that we do crisis really, really well. Like the pandemic, like we were like, okay, we're ready for this. We got this. Like we can do this. And so we walk through really hard circumstances initially really well. But afterwards is when we tend to crash. And sometimes, especially as a 6, it can catch us really off guard because we felt so strong for a moment and then all of a sudden we feel weak. And I remember exactly when it hit me. We had stayed in Seattle for a week just to kind of wrap everything up. And we got on the plane to come home. And because I had to book my ticket last minute, you guys will appreciate this because you travel. there were no aisle or window seats left. And so a middle seat to fly across the country from Seattle to Charlotte, North Carolina is like worst case scenario. And so I remember when I realized when I got on the plane that I was sitting in the middle seat and I was in between these two very large men that just were not very nice people in this moment. I sat down and it was like all of a sudden everything just hit me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the Band-Aid was the fact that I had to sit in the middle seat and it just got ripped off in that moment. And these poor men sitting next to me, I mean, I was just sobbing and I'm not a huge like emotional crier kind of person. And I mean, it just all came out. And as we were leaving Seattle, I felt like the Holy Spirit just came over me and I'm getting emotional talking about this in such a supernatural way, in a way that only God can come over you in the midst of a tragedy like that. And it was like he put me in this little bubble and he just whispered, if you'll just keep walking with me, I'll keep working through this. And so I kept that moment really close to me. And then, you know, I wish I could tell you I got home and it was just like, you know, life was just back to normal and easy. But I mean, it was weeks and months of hard because the pandemic hit right after that. So all that to say, there were moments where I definitely felt God's grace, but there was a lot of hard days. There was a lot of days where I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to write. I didn't want to go on social media. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to do those things because, can I just be honest with you? I was really angry at God. Mm-hmm. I was. Yeah. The fact that he would allow so much hard stuff to happen in such a short amount of time, it felt very unfair, right? And I think it's okay to feel that way. It's okay to bring those emotions to God and say, you know what? I'm just really not okay with this. And this doesn't make any sense to me and I don't like it, but I'm going to keep walking with you. And I know that you're going to keep working through this. And eventually we'll get to the point where I can see your faithfulness in this.
I'm so glad that you addressed that. I think a lot of people who are going through disappointment, maybe they've not had two deaths in the last month, but they're walking through a sad, long story of letdown. And they don't feel permission to be honest with God about where they are. And what I see that as is just a withholding from God. I think of this famous quote by Mother Teresa in her book, Come Be My Light, where she said, when I see someone sad, it's because they're refusing something to Jesus. It's like we're almost withholding our whole heart. We're actually just trying to give him what we think he wants to see. And then that's just conditional love. We're not really trusting that he loves us unconditionally, even in our anger, even in our frustration, because it's what you're experiencing is real. It's normal. Like there's an anger, like this is not okay. That's part of the stages of grief. Anger is a very active stage of grief. I remember like looking up the stages just to make sure it was okay to be feeling the anger because it's like something is robbed, something is lost. Chip Dodd talks about anger as an emotion and just says anger is just a positive emotion that all is not well, like something is missing. It comes with a conviction that says this is not the way it's supposed to be, which is true. It wasn't supposed to end the way that you thought it was supposed to end. It feels like it was abrupt. It was cut short. It's tragic. So God is okay with that. Not only is okay with that, he actually wants to hold you in that, hold us in that for whatever listeners out there. It's, we don't need to withhold our strong emotions because God meets us there. I was even thinking about your timing on the airplane. My dad passed 3 years ago, and my timing of kind of breaking down mentally was the same thing. You kind of get through that initial, like, saying goodbye and watching him go and kind of doing some arrangements for funeral and working out all the travel and, like, what all that looks like. And then it was the first day a week later that I was alone, or at least I wasn't with the people who were counting on me or depending on me. You were between two total strangers, and right. I just crashed because it was like I finally felt permission that was just me and no one was looking at me to, like, hold something together. And it was just sudden reminder that I can't. God holds this together. I don't.
Samaritan Ministries is a community of Christians who live out Galatians 6:2 by bearing one another's burdens when a medical need arises. And I want to encourage each of you to check this out. In this new year, as you're looking at your budget, as you're trying to evaluate where can you cut costs, where could there be a savings, I know when we talk about medical needs, that can create a lot of nervousness. But Samaritan's Ministries has created such a way to do this. It's so unique, and it actually saves you so much money. It's not traditional insurance, but you do have the freedom to choose the doctor, hospital, and pharmacy that works best for you and your family. And then Samaritan members directly share those medical expenses with one another. It's affordable. You can join today. Go talk to them. Figure out what would this cost for your family and consider if you're in a transition or you're looking at that budget, I think you'll be impressed with what they can provide. So you can learn more at SamaritanMinistries.org/RFL podcast. That's SamaritanMinistries.org/RFL podcast.
Before we go, because I could talk to you forever about this, everyone needs to get this book. It's brilliant and beautiful, and you know it comes with authority because she's walked it. So I just want to go ahead and say that right now. When you have walked through something, the Lord has met you in that place. There's a power that comes with those words. And so for anyone listening that's walking through some stage of grief and loss, longing, get this book. It's going to be a resource. It's going to be a lifeline for you. But I would love, Nikki, for you to give just some parting words of encouragement, having been on the other side of this 2.5 years for your mom and not much shorter with your brother. What would you say to them now that you've kind of learned a couple of years down the road with these kind of intentional decisions as a lifeline for you? What would you encourage them with?
That's a great question, Rebecca. I would say that, you know, one of the greatest lessons I have learned about grief and loss is that it sometimes hits you in the most unexpected ways. And so, you know, even though we're a few years out from this, not quite, I mean, we're just over a year with my brother. I would say that there are still days where it hits, it feels like a tsunami, mm-hmm. like it just comes out of nowhere. And so I have learned that instead of running and resisting that and pushing it down, to stop and to let it come. And when it comes, let it come as long as it needs to. Did you know that you can only cry for 9 minutes?
Stop
like that's
it.
All you can, that's all you can cry for.
I have
for.
Never
Your body...
heard that factoid in my life.
Yes.
I'm going to
yes.
remember that.
I mean, I've heard that several times, but maybe somebody would fact check me on that and find another resource.
No,
but
I think that's encouraging yeah. for someone who cries a lot.
Yes. Yeah, your body husband. Cannot.
And for her
By the way, I'm just listening to the two of you go like, on and on because like, you're having such a great conversation. So I'd still hear people, but I'm just listening.
9 minutes. You got to make it through nine
yes,
minutes, babe.
9 minutes. So just get through those 9 minutes and, you know, and then if you need to have another round, then do it. But give yourself that permission to grieve and to be hurt and to be angry at God. It's not our questions for God that threatens our faith. It's our questioning of God that threatens our faith. And so be vulnerable to bring those questions before him. I still have days where I'm like, God, why? Like I look at my brother's kids and they ask me questions and they say things and I'm like, God, why? And sometimes we just have to settle on that reality that there's sometimes there's things on this side of eternity that will never make sense to our human minds. But one day we will step over to the other side and we'll see the full picture and Jesus will be holding all of us together.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, thank you for being a part of this. Gabe, do you want to get a word in edgewise as we close?
I feel like I'm going to start journaling more
yes.
as a result of this conversation. And I'm just grateful because I know, Nikki, so many people walk through such pain and they don't have the ability to walk anybody else through how to learn from what their experience was. And it takes somebody willing to share the really hard stuff. And you do that in your book, Flooded. And so I'm just thankful for your faithfulness to do that. And I know it's going to help so many people, even though it's painful to probably have to keep talking it through. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Absolutely. My joy.
Yeah, I just love that she explains how she came back from this long season of despair and doubt. I mean, that was a long season, and she's showing there's another side to that.
Well, I mean, it was kind of remarkable. I did just sit and listen so much because I felt like where you guys were going together was beautiful and helpful to all of us. And so thank you for doing that. Thank you for bringing the empathy and the understanding into that moment that I think so many of us need to experience through our relationships. But we just want to encourage you, go get Nikki's book, read through this yourself. She gives you 5 very practical ways, these decisions that you make when life's hard and when you're having doubt, because the challenge when you're in those moments is you don't always have the energy to do it and you don't know where to go or what the next step ought to be. And this kind of a book on your bookshelf, maybe you're not feeling it right now, but be prepared for it. Have this sort of resource available so that you can be encouraged. It's called Flooded, the 5 Best Decisions to Make When Life's Hard and Doubt is Rising by Nikki Koziarz. We hope you'll read that. And then also, don't forget, sign up now at RebeccaLyons.com/retreat so that you can be the first to know about the retreat dates and see all about that information coming this fall. And we hope you have an incredible week.